you're tired of fumbling in the dark with a flashlight to read your EMF meter, then the folks at Professional Measurement have the solution for you. Introducing the MEL meter. The MEL 8704 is a precision-made scientific instrument designed especially for the paranormal investigator and enthusiast. This is the only meter that can read both EMF and temperature changes at the same time. An easy-to-read backlight display allows you to monitor and record changes in real time with one hand. And check out the new Pro Navigator with night vision compatible red light source and 30 feet of illumination range. This is the tool you've been waiting for. The MEL meter. Available now at promeasurement.com or by calling 1-888-344-0111. Professional Measurement, your one-stop source for industrial and commercial-grade precision EMF meters and instruments.
Amanda, age 3. Tyler, age 8. Marissa, age 4.5.
We could tell you just how many child abductions last year led to Amber Alerts.
Shaniqua, age 14. Ryan, age 9.
But this isn't about cult statistics. It's about saving kids.
Terrell and Jamal, age 6 months.
Please go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up to get free Amber Alert text messages on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today for free at wirelessamberalerts.org. You can imagine what the family of an abducted child is feeling.
Alexander, age 7.
If you actually did help save that child, just imagine what that would feel like. WirelessAmberAlerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
This is Bishop James Long with the Sacred Division, inviting you to listen to Ghost Chatter every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Para-X Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The goal of a man is to make his voice heard during their lives. Only in death can man's voice be truly silenced. Or is it? There exists a place we go when we leave this earth. A place where our voice can never be silenced. The place exists in the paranormal universe, and it remains separated from the reality of the living. But sometimes, the will of the living and the deceased is so strong that it breaks through the barriers that divides the two realities. The voices of the departed are heard once again. We call this Ghost Chatter.
Ghost Chatter.
Jimmy Morris.
Hello everyone, this is Jimmy Morris, host of Ghost Chatter here on the Para-X Radio Network. I'd like to welcome everyone to the show this week. This week is part 3 in our Paranormal 101 series. This particular episode today we are calling Paranormal Equipment. Today we're going to be talking about all different kinds of equipment that is used in the paranormal field. Now I'm going to try to keep from going too in-depth as far as technical-wise as far as how some of this stuff works. I'm more concerned with getting the names of these equipment out there and how we use them in the paranormal field. Now if anyone is listening and they have any technical questions about a particular piece of equipment, if you have access to the internet, you can jump into our interactive chat room at www.para-x.com. Click on live chat. Once in there, you will see me in the chat room. You can then click on my name and send me a private message, and I will answer any question that I can on any equipment that we talk about, or if I If you have a question on a piece of equipment that I may have missed, please be sure to let me know, and I'll let you know what I know about it. Also, if you're tuning in on the air, you can call in at 325-200-4512. Again, the call-in number tonight is 325-200-4512. Some of the things tonight that we're going to cover, as far as equipment goes, we're going to be talking about digital recorders. We want to talk definitely about K2 meters, mail meters, DVR systems, temperature recorders, cameras, video cameras, all kinds of other different types of equipment that some of you may not be familiar with, you know, how it's used. Some of it's real basic stuff that can be used for different things in the paranormal field and during investigations. So hopefully, you know, we'll cover some of that. And I'm not going to do these in any particular order as far as, you know, what we think are the best or worst. But I am going to save one particular topic for kind of the last thing that we talk about, because there is one piece of equipment that I believe is more important than any of all the other ones, and that will be one of the last ones that we talk about here tonight on Ghost Chatter. The first one I want to talk about is digital recorders. Now, anyone who's ever investigated with me knows that digital recorders are probably my favorite as far as a piece of equipment, because I believe that they are the source of the best pieces of information or evidence that we are able to capture. Now, I know that we can catch things on photographs. I know we can catch things on video. But those media outlets, they're so open to interpretation and are so easy to fabricate that regardless of their validity, they will never hold the type of weight that we can get from EVPs on digital recorders. Now, when I say digital recorders, I really mean any type of audio recording devices. Digital recorders, analog recorders, some are better than others for different reasons. For instance, I like to use some of the older RCA digital recorders. I mean, these are your $39 off-the-shelf at Walmart recorders. But when I pair them beside other recorders that I've gotten that's been, you know, in the $80, $90, $100 plus range, I do not get as many EVPs or clear EVPs as I do with some of the lower end, like the RCAs. And the lower end RCAs I like because they record in WAV format or MP3 format, whichever you choose, and you can bring them straight off the digital recorder onto your computer that way. Some of the newer, more expensive ones record in their own format, and you have to use their software to pull it up, and then from that software you can save it off as a WAV or an MP3. One thing with digital versus analog recorders. Analog recorders would be like your mini tape recorders or your full-size tape recorders, anything that stores media on a magnetic tape. Now, there are some great pluses in using analog recorders. Analog recorders have great potential for some really nice EVPs. One of the biggest things I've noticed between analog and digital is digital recorders, while they can get some really good EVPs, analog tends to capture more of the inflection of the voice than a digital does. A digital recorder uses a processor, and that processor tends to mechanicalize any voice that is not real clear. Now, if I was speaking into the microphone, I'm strong enough and clear enough to where the processor is going to duplicate my voice pretty well. When you start getting into EVPs to where, you know, it's not real clear how these EVPs are getting on that, you lose a little bit of that that personal touch to the EVP. Whereas one, a same EVP, both captured on an analog and a digital, on the digital, you might hear what you think to be a man's voice saying, "How are you?" Whereas on the analog, you can hear that man's voice saying, "How are you?" And that man sounds like Uncle Bob. Because it's got that human inflection that the digital recorders sometimes miss. Another thing with the recorders is digitals are real easy to analyze. That's why most paranormal investigators and ghost hunters these days, they use digital recorders, because when you're moving large amounts of audio over with a digital, it's just a couple clicks of the mouse. You've got your files over, you're ready to start analyzing, saving off what you need. Analogs are a little bit different. What you have to do is you have to get that analog over to your computer. And I receive dozens of emails a year from people asking me how they can use and get that information from the analog over to the computer. And the absolute best way to do it is using something like a WavePad, which is a free program that you can get from nch.com. You can pull that down, take your analog recorder in the headphone jack. You're going to need a male-male cable. And what you're going to do with that cable, on one end, you're going to plug it into the headphone jack of the analog recorder. The other end, you're going to plug into the microphone in jack of your computer sound card. Or if you have a newer computer that has built-in sound, you know, it'll be a little green, or you have a little green and pink mic and speaker port, either on the front or back, or sometimes both. But you plug the other end of that male-male into the microphone section of your computer. Now, whenever you play that analog recorder, the program that you have, you can go in there and hit record, and then what you're basically doing is you're re-recording from your analog player onto your recording program, whether it's Audacity or WavePad. The downside is you have to play the whole thing to get the whole thing on your computer. So now what you have to pull all that over. So if you've got 5 hours of audio, you're going to have 5 hours of wait time while your computer records that. Once you get it recorded, then you can save that file to your computer, and it is now a digitized file. So you now have a digital file of that analog recording, and then you can go in and start reviewing it. I'm going to move along here. Don't want to take a whole lot of time since we've got so much stuff to cover. Anyone tuning in, this is Jimmy with Ghost Chatter here on Parex Radio. And also want to remind anyone who is not in the chat room, you can come on over to www.para-x.com and click on live chat at the top. You can get into our interactive chat room. Seems we had another drop out there real quick. But we're back up and scooting now. You know, that is, for 2 weeks now, we've been having little dropouts coming in and out on the show here. And I'm going to have that fixed by next week. I'm going to get in here this week. I'm going to figure this out. I think it has something to do with Norton, and I'm going to start disabling that on our broadcasting system so that it doesn't jump in here and interfere with our broadcast. So let's move on to the next thing I wanted to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about some of the EMF or electromagnetic field meters that we use in the paranormal. The first one I want to talk about, I'm going to talk about just two here, the two most known ones that are used. First, we've got the K2 meter, and most paranormal investigators out there will know what that is. It's actually like a little gray coffin-looking device, and if you flip it upside down, that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a little coffin. And on it, you got two different versions. You've got one that has a push button on the top, which is you hold that in to power on the machine. It's a pressure-sensitive button, so if you let off of it, the lights will blink and go off. Some models have a switch on the side which bypasses the pressure switch on the top, and it's like a toggle. You flip it on and it stays on. One tip to use, which I do it all the time, rather than converting that over to a switch, you can take some type of small coin, and when you push the button down, you can just kind of wedge a coin in between the button and the frame of the K2, and that will hold it on. The reason you want to do that, you want that active while you're walking around, so that you can get readings, and you don't want to hold your finger on the button, because as soon as you push the button down, the lights automatically light all the way up, they go back down, and then it starts recording. Well, if you just let a little bit of pressure off your finger, then it goes off and then comes back on. So you can real easily get false readings yourself, or other people can fake readings when they have that pressure button and they're using that. So, you know, you can wedge a little coin in there, then you can just hold it from the bottom. Your finger's nowhere near the button, and, you know, it's not as, it's a lot harder for anyone to try to manipulate it using that button, and it's a lot easier for people to see, you know, when they're getting readings and, you know, they're holding the thing in their hand from the bottom. You know that it's not them. It's not them manipulating or playing with that button in any way. One thing about the K2 that I like is the fact that it's very, very visible whenever you're investigating in, you know, low or no light environments. You know, the way the color-coded LED lights come up rather than a digital readout, it's something that's going to catch your eye real quick if you have any type of spikes. Now, a downside to the K2 meter is it can pick up a whole slew of things that can set it off. On paranormal investigating, if you're near major appliances in a home, like refrigerators or something like that, those coming on can spike it. If anyone has a cell phone, those will spike it. If someone gets a text message because they've left their phone on, that's going to spike it. Even natural things, if the house is near a transformer and the transformer goes through power cycles, it can be strong enough to pick it up even if the house is pretty close to, you know, if the pole outside is the pole that has a transformer. So you need to look for those kind of things. And whenever you do get major spikes, keep a mental note of when it happens, or write it down, because 5 minutes later, you may get the same thing again. And then 5 minutes later, you may get the same thing again. And all of a sudden, if you start seeing 5 minute, 5 minute, 5 minute, 5 minute spikes, then you know it's something going on. You've got like a power transformer that's cycling through, you know, on these programmed intervals, or something in the house that's kicking on and off and on and off. So be sure to watch those things whenever you're using the K2 meter. Another thing that will set it off is the two-way radios, like the GMRS radios and the FRS radios that investigators use. Pretty much any time you hit the talk button, you're gonna send any K2 that's in the room probably right through the roof. So keep in mind that any type of two-way radios, so all of a sudden if you see your K2 spike at the same time you hear like a clicking sound on your radio, somebody else may have accidentally hit their button on the radio, and that's what spiked it off. So, you know, you want to kind of keep your eye out for that and be aware of those type of things when you're investigating. We're going to jump away here real quick for our first break of the evening. When we come back, we're going to talk about the next EMF device for the night, which is the Mel meter. So everyone stay tuned. We will be back in a moment.
Para X Radio invites you to listen to Ghost Chatter with your host, Jimmy Morris, every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at www.para-x.com.
I'm through with watching ghost shows on my TV station. See them fake evidence on their investigations. The shows never turn out quite the way I want them to be.
Tell me what you want.
I want an investigator who won't run away and still has my respect at the end of the day. And an IR picture that looks like something to me.
Tell me what you need.
I need an internet credit card that's got no limit and a big black van with an office in it. Everyone in the chat room screams when they know it's me.
Been there, done that.
I want a room full of cameras and laptops too. Want my videos to be huge on YouTube. Somewhere between taps and gax is fine with me.
How you gonna do it?
I'm gonna trade this life for paraglam fame. Keep my dignity, won't disgrace my name. Cause we all just wanna be big para stars. Living in haunted houses, going to haunted bars. The ghosts come heavy and the equipment ain't cheap. We all stay tired, we just don't sleep. And we'll hang out in the barracks chair, watching Dave and Demi with those big gold hats. Every ghost tunnel's gonna wind up there. Every ghost chatter chick with their bleached blonde hair. And hey, yeah, I wanna be a para star. Hey, I wanna be a para star. I wanna be great like Hans without the hassle. Take a trip overseas to ghost hunt some castles. Sign a couple of autographs so I can get in Wavy Hills for free.
I'll take the third floor.
I'm gonna dress myself in a pair of fashions. Get a front door key to the Winchester Mansion. Gonna start a great team so they can ghost hunt with me.
So how you gonna do it?
I'm gonna trade this life for paraglam fame. Keep my dignity, won't disgrace my name. Cause we all just wanna be big para stars. Living in haunted houses, going to haunted bars. The ghosts come missing and the equipment ain't cheap. We all stay tired, we just won't sleep. And we'll hang out in the barracks chair, watching Dave and Jimmy with those big gold hats. Every ghost hunter's gonna wind up there. Every ghost chat a chick with their bleached blonde hair. And we'll sit down in the darkest rooms with the latest recorders and today's cartoons. We'll capture every ghost within 1,000 miles. Everybody's got a fever knowledge just on speed dial. Well, hey, hey, I wanna be a para star. I'm gonna prove there's ghosts using thermal sensors. Gonna pop no dose from a pest dispenser. I get washed up, investigators working on my cases, and TV crews follow me to cool haunted places. Cause we all just wanna be big para stars. Living in haunted houses and going to haunted bars. The ghosts come easy and the equipment ain't cheap. We all stay tired, we just don't sleep. And we'll hang out in the barracks chat, watching Dave and Jimmy with those big gold hats. Every ghost on us gonna wind up there. Every ghost chatter chick tossing the bleached blonde hair. And we'll sit down in the darkest rooms with the latest recorders and today's cartoons. We'll capture every ghost within 1,000 miles. Everybody's got a demonologist on speed dial. Well, hey, hey, I wanna be a para star. Oh, yeah, hey, I wanna be a para star.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Now we turn to the Ghost Chatter.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Jimmy at Ghost Chatter here on the Para-X Radio Network. Again, if you're tuning in on the air and would like to join us online, you can come into our interactive chat site, www.para-x.com. Click on live chat, come into the chat room, interact with us here. You can hear the show. Great bunch of people in here that you can interact with from the paranormal community and beyond. So we look forward to seeing you there. When we jumped away from the break, we were talking about EMF meters. We talked a little bit about the K2. The other one I want to talk about briefly here tonight is the Mel meter. Now, many of you out there know what the Mel meters are. There's actually several. They started out with the Mel meter 8704, and then they advanced into the Pro Mel meter 8704 Pro Navigators, and they've even progressed beyond that now to several different models of the 8704. And there's something about the Mel meter which is unique from other equipment. The Mel meter is a piece of equipment that was designed and built for paranormal investigating. It's not something that was built, you know, to check wiring in a home that is just being utilized as a piece of paranormal equipment. The Mel meter 8704 actually is built for paranormal investigating. That's what it was designed for. It was built by Gary Galka. He's the owner of a company called ProMeasure, which is at pro-measure.com. You can go there and check out a lot of the equipment that he has. Gary has given a lot of these Mel meters away in the past, especially in the beginning, to paranormal investigators to test and check out. And it's a real interesting story behind the Mel meter that I want to share with you. And the whole reason Gary got into making these is because of a tragic car wreck in which his daughter, whom they called Mel, tragically lost her life in. And he set out to try to build some machines or equipment that maybe would help try to establish communication with her. Now, some of you know that the Mel 8704, well, Mel, of course, is after her daughter. What a lot of people don't realize is that 87 represents the year that her daughter was, his daughter was born, I'm sorry, and 04 is the year that she died in a car crash. So whenever you see that, the Mel meter 8704, you'll know what those numbers mean and why he made that meter that way. And almost every purchase that someone makes of the Mel meter, part of that goes to a fund that he has set up to help other people who have lost children in accidents and car wrecks and things like that. Now, I really like the Mel meter. There are things about it that I really like. The one I use the most is one of the ProNav 8704s. They measure not only EMF in digital form, but they also measure the ambient temperature in the room. The 8704 ProNav with a filter will have a red backlight, which is not so harsh on your eyes. Some of the 8704 ProNavs will have a green backlight, which is kind of bright. I mean, it stands out a little bit. But the good thing about these is there's a couple different modes. There's your standard mode and your burst mode. Standard mode is a little bit slower, and what it does, it takes readings and gives you an average based on a couple seconds. Burst mode is real time. You know, it's right when it's changing. The thing is with burst mode is, you know, because it measures in tenths of milligauss, you know, you see a lot of movement up and down. Even walking, you know, you generate EMF energy when you're walking, and the Mel meter can pick that up. So it's real easy to get little readings as you're moving around a room. So a lot of people don't use the burst. And also when you use the burst, you don't see the temperature. The burst kind of, it's the whole attention of the screen. When you're in the regular mode, you can see both the temperature and the EMF at the same time. You can also set the EMF to record so that the Mel meter will record the readings and any fluctuations it gets. So you can actually, it's got a little leg on the back. You can fold it out and stand it up, and you can use the Mel meter. You can set it up and prop it up and leave the room and still come back and look and see if there was any spikes, because it will record that, which is a real good feature. It also has a small red LED light so that, you know, you can also use it as a flashlight. So right there, you've got temperature recording, EMF recording, and a light all in one device. And some of the K2 hybrid Mel meters even has the K2 functions, which the EMF, it actually has the LEDs at the top that will translate also along with the digital. One of the reasons for that is paranormal investigators that use these devices for RTSC, or real-time spirit communication, the lights work better because they can tell a spirit, you know, if the answer is yes, light up all the lights. Where it's a little harder, you know, to tell them, you know, go up to a 5 milligauss or 6 milligauss or 10 milligauss. It's much easier, and during real-time spirit communications, everybody that around can see the readings rather than just the person that's looking at the screen without everyone having to hover over that person. Now, moving on to some other equipment, you know, DVR systems, not a whole lot to say there. They are what they are. We set these up. They're mostly internal IR night vision cameras that basically capture any type of movement that's in the room. The only thing that I want to say with those is whenever you get them, look at how many IR LEDs there are in it. The more there are, usually the brighter the room is going to be in dark situations. So keep in mind when you're getting your cameras, like my cameras have 32 LEDs per camera. If you get into a situation where that's not enough, go out and look for IR illuminators, and then you can put those along with your camera that will boost your IR inputs. They make some that are IR floods that you can set in the center of a room, and no matter where your camera is, you know, that room is going to look like daytime in there. Another thing is being sure whenever you're setting up your cameras, it's kind of like, you know, the old Ghost Hunter movies, do not cross the streams. You don't want to get IR cameras facing each other, because then you're going to get IR reflections and you're going to see ghostly looking things when people walk by because of those IR beams. Another thing real quick with DVRs is they've got wireless and they've got wired. In my experience, if you want to get any type of quality out of what you're doing, go with the wired. The wireless systems, there's too much interference. You know, any little thing, radios on and off, tend to interfere with them. If you do use wireless, the number one thing you need to look for when you go into a home is if people, they operate on the same frequency as most routers in a home, wireless routers. So if they've got a computer there with a wireless router, it's going to play havoc if you've got a wireless DVR system. So always look for that if you're using wireless, and turn those routers off during your investigation. Another thing I want to talk about is ghost boxes. These are also called RTSC devices, which is real-time spirit communication. What typical ghost boxes are, as used with most paranormal investigators, these are basically radios, like AM/FM radios, that have been modified so that they scan the entire bands at high speed. Now, most of you know that you can get a small radio and you can turn it on and you can hit the seek or scan button, and the radio will go quiet and it'll seek through, find a station, lock onto it, and then you hear the audio. What we do is we modify those so that whenever you hit that seek button or scan button, it doesn't go quiet. You hear this as it's flipping through all the frequencies. You actually hear the sound, and it never stops. When it finds a signal, it just keeps going. It just constantly goes from one end of the band to the other and then repeats itself automatically. So as long as you've got it on and scanning, it will continuously go forever till it runs out of a battery or you turn it off. Now, on these devices, what we have found is that spirits can communicate with us through these. It's harder in some places than others, and a lot of it has to do with whoever is running the session. You know, spirits get attached to people, spirits get attached to these boxes, and they may travel. You may get the same spirit in a lot of different places. You know, we have gotten the same people asked talking to us in Texas, and then we go to Arizona, and we've got the same people talking to us. So they follow these people, and they follow these boxes. So with these ghost boxes, we're able to hear real time. We don't have to wait like on the EVPs to listen to them later. We hear them right away, and we can answer back and get interaction and actually get, you know, somewhat of conversations going using these. Now, if you don't have these, you can pick them up at a lot of them at Radio Shack. There's some Jensens out there that are hackable now. You can pretty much go out and Google ghost boxes, or if you're looking to get one. One of the ones that I still like, which is one of the originals, is the 12-469. It's a Radio Shack, RS-12-469. It's one of the easier ones to hack, and it's got a clicking sound, but that clicking sound, I get more interaction off of that box than I do the other five that I have. And the other five that I have, none of those click, so you just hear the noise through. The 469 has got that ticking, that tick, 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 tick as it goes through the frequencies, but I get great responses from it. So, you know, don't rule it out just because it was the first one and it's got that little annoying tick to it, because I think maybe sometimes that tick may be something kind of like a beacon that helps them tune into that box a little bit better. Another thing that's really going to affect your ghost boxes is where you are. You know, if you live in the middle of downtown Los Angeles, you know, you're going to have a whole lot harder problem getting interaction on your ghost box than if you live, you know, in Mojave, California, to where, you know, the closest radio station is 100 miles away. You're not going to have as much clatter to go through. And one of the original assumptions with ghost boxes was that a spirit uses all that clatter to make voices. Well, personally, I don't believe that anymore, because I've used the ghost boxes in places to where when I'm scanning, you don't hear a sound when it comes to radio station. I've been out in the middle of nowhere and turned on a box session, let it scan through 5 minutes, and you don't hear a peep. And then when you start talking, you start getting clear responses to the things that you're asking. So I tend to believe now that, you know, that isn't the case, that they are actually communicating directly, you know, through the box. So keep that in mind too with your location. Don't be frustrated if you're doing an investigation and you've just got so much clutter and background noise. There's not too much you can do about it. One thing that I'm experimenting with right now with the ghost box is removing the antenna, the internal antenna, to see that if they can still communicate through the box without the antenna, hoping I can cut out some of the radio stuff and still be able to get that RTSC communication. And if that works out, then we'll be able to use these boxes in more populated areas and not have to worry so much about things like that. Going on to the next thing, I want to talk about temperature recorders. Basically, kind of going back to the mail meter, this is like a standalone temp recorder. A couple different kinds out there. Most of the best ones that are being used now are digital. Some of them look like almost like pistol grips that, you know, you just push the button. A lot of them have like laser pointers on them just to kind of show where you are. The thing to remember with those, and I've talked with a lot of groups and did training sessions with a lot of groups that are misinformed, that when they pull the trigger on the device and it shoots a dot on the wall, that the temperature that they're getting is from that dot on the wall. That's not true. The only thing the dot is there for is just as a general reference of where you're pointing, which direction. Temperature actually is being taken in front of the thermometer, kind of going out at about a 40 to 45 degree angle, with it being less accurate the further it goes out. If you look on most of your, anyone who has those pistol grip type monitors, recorders, you'll see on the top it actually will have, usually stamped into the plastic, it'll be like a graph that kind of shows you the effectiveness and the effective range of it as it spans out. So don't shoot the wall and say, okay, that dot on the wall is 75 degrees. If you shoot it and it's saying 75, that means the ambient air out in front of you is 75 degrees. You know, if you shoot it down, like you can hold it over like a pot of boiling water and shoot it down and get a temperature that's pretty accurate because you're shooting pretty close to it. You know, if you were across the room and you shot at that boiling pot of water, your temperature reading is going to be a lot less than it was if you were right on it, even though your little red dot is on it, because it's not measuring that little red dot, it's measuring the air in front of you. The dot is just for a reference. Another thing, guys, thermal cameras. Everybody loves thermal cameras, and that's the big hype that everybody is talking about. But got thermal camera, use thermal camera, don't like thermal cameras. I've caught a couple good things on them. There's one photo that's posted on the Waverly Hills website. It's one of the first thermal images ever caught there at www.therealwaverlyhills.com. You can look through and you can find an image from Texas Paranormal Research there. And I caught this up on the third floor. One other time I caught an image real good was at a place called Fort McCabot. The problem with thermal is you got to have devices to encode most of them out to, unless you have a real, real expensive one. You know, and when I say real expenses, I'm talking $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 range. The one I had was $8,000. And the thing with the thermal camera is it will totally mess up your night vision. I can see an application if you're setting it there and just having it look down a hallway, you've got it plugged to external power, got it streamed out to a recording device somewhere, then, you know, they definitely have their place. Personally, I don't feel that they're worth their money for what it is that most of us use them for. So, that being said, another thing, if you do have a thermal camera or you're thinking about a thermal camera and get one, be very, very careful in residential places or places where there are a lot of reflective surfaces like windows. IR photos will not go through windows. In fact, if you have a camera in front of you, a thermal camera, and you point it toward a window, you're going to see an apparition full as day right in front of you, but that apparition is you behind the camera because the IR is reflecting off the glass, coming back, picking you up behind the camera and showing you as it's standing in front. So always keep that in mind if you're using them. You got to watch where you are, because if you are in a place with a lot of reflective surfaces, you're going to have apparitions everywhere, and those apparitions are you. A couple other things I want to go to. There's another type of thermal camera that's out there. It's called an infusion thermal camera. These are new one that's out. They have the same rules as a regular camera. The only difference in them, and I'm just going to let you guys know this real quick, is an infusion camera, as it's recording, you can take snapshots, which you can with a thermal camera, but the difference with an infusion camera is when you take that snapshot or that photo that you see something, and you take that photo, in that photographic mode, it is taking two pictures. It is taking the thermal image, and it is taking like a 1.2 or 1.3 megapixel photo. And then what the software will do when you load it onto the software, you can merge that IR photo back into a 1.3 pixel regular photo. Where that might be handy is, let's say you caught something on that thermal image. You know, you've got like an apparition looking thing. Well, you can slowly infuse that back to a regular photo step by step by step. And then you can kind of see what happens to that thing as you go back to a normal photo. You know, what does it look like in a normal photo? Can you even see it in a normal photo? And then what did it look like on thermal? And you can slowly make that transition with those. A few other things I want to talk about. Of course, dowsing rods is something that is used in paranormal investigating. A lot of people not familiar with the paranormal will think of dowsing rods as things that they used to use to find water. Well, paranormal investigators use them to find spirits. They use them to help try to find unmarked graves, bodies, anything like that. The dowsing rods are used for. The thing with the dowsing rods, you got to remember, is they can be, they are prone to human interpretation, which means if you move, you can make them move on your own without them doing it themselves. Just remember that when you're holding them by the handles, hold them very, very lightly. You just want, as they come up and curve, you just want them to lay over your forefingers. You don't want to be gripping them, and you don't want to be angling your hand. You want to be sure when you walk, you keep your hands as straight as possible, and there's plenty of room in your hand for that little metal rod or stick or whatever kind that you're using. All you're doing is the back of your hand, or kind of where your thumb is and down, it is just bracing the back of it at the bottom of your palm. You know, you're not holding it tight. You should not have a tight grip at all. As a matter of fact, you should probably have about a 3/4 inch lead across from the base of your thumb to the middle of your pointer finger where that little rod is sitting in. So it is just dangling over your hand. And then you be real careful in what you do. And treat them just like you were doing like an EVP session or a ghost box session. You know, ask questions. Ask questions to get them to cross. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the rods to cross. So ask questions just like you would doing anything else when you're using those rods. You know, talk to the spirits. You know, ask them to help you, guide you where you're going. You know, because it's not necessarily in the paranormal field something that's solid that's going to interact with them, even though solid objects definitely will. You know, you can get help from the paranormal, from the spirit world, if you want to call it that, to guide you where you need to go. So don't rule that out when you're using dowsing rods on investigations or anything like that. I want to go through some other stuff that can be used. A compass, a great, great substitute for an EMF meter. Compasses will pick up and react to those same electromagnetic fields that Bell meters, K2 meters, or any other EMF device will. So whenever you can, take a compass, set it on the table in front of you whenever you're doing an investigation. The bigger the compass, the better, you know. I'd like to use one of those, like the ones you see for seafarers, the big marine compasses. Get you something like that, take it with you, and watch how a compass reacts to the same EMF fluctuations that you catch on your EMF devices. And they are less prone to electronic stuff like your radios and things like that. It takes a little bit stronger focus in order to get them. It doesn't have a microprocessor in there telling it, you know, oh, I just picked up a little faint deal, so let me light up a light. So try to use your compasses and just see what you think of them. Those of you that haven't, those of you that have will know what I'm talking about. You know, it's real neat when you're sitting there and all of a sudden your compass starts spinning. A few other things I want to talk about that kind of aren't the norm. Cotton balls, baby powder, tape, bags. These are all, and when I say bags, like black plastic bags, these are all devices you can use in paranormal investigating. What they are used for is, let's say you're in a location and you've got people that say, you know, I see people coming in and out of this room. Take a black plastic bag, like a garbage bag, lay it down on the floor in front of that door. flatten it out, tape down the corners, take baby powder, sprinkle baby powder all over that back. You might be very surprised to find out that you may come back and find small footstep looking things in that bag where they've come through that door. Another thing, cotton balls. Use those on doors where they say, you know, this door closes by itself or opens by itself. Take that door and put a cotton ball up on top of the door. You know, don't close it all the way, you know, just close it a little bit or leave it all the way open. Put a cotton ball up there. And then the least little movement of that door is going to knock that cotton ball off. So if that door closes and then opens back, you know, and you don't see it or you don't have a camera on it, if you come back and that cotton ball is halfway in front of the between the door and the door frame, well, you know, at some point that door moved forward and knocked that cotton ball off. So that's just another real cheap little thing you can do to take the place of like motion detectors. You know, if you don't have motion detectors to sit there and put on the door, use the cotton ball. And you know, tape, you can also use that if they're insistent that a door is opening on its own or opening and closing, put a piece of tape on it and come back and see if that tape has been pulled off of either side. Those are just little things that we can do in order to get the job done in the paranormal field, and it doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg to do it. There's different ways to do things, so you don't always have to have, you know, a $500 gadget in order to get something done. Lastly, the last thing I want to talk about as far as equipment goes is pen, paper, and you. You are the most important piece of equipment that goes into a paranormal investigation. You have the ability to find or not find anything that's in that house. You can walk in there with $25,000 worth of equipment, and another guy can walk in there with himself, a pen, and a piece of paper, and he will come out with everything that he went in there to find while you come out with nothing. That's because all these things are tools, and these tools are just a focus of your energy. I've always said if you go into a paranormal investigation, if you go in thinking, I'm not going to find anything here, guess what? You're not. If you go in and with the mindset that I am going to communicate with the spirits that are here. Okay. Spirits interact with you based on how they perceive you. They perceive a happy, confident person different than they do someone who is in a bad mood or cranky or grouchy when they go in there. You know, they don't want to deal with you, and most of them won't deal with you. So keep that in mind, that you are the most important piece of equipment when you go into a place. Pen and paper. Write down things that happen. If you're just so much against a pen and paper, and I do sometimes I don't. If you don't have a pen and paper, have a recorder with you, always on, and verbally document these things that happen. So if you're sitting there and you feel something on your back, you know, say that. You know, don't, even if you're by yourself, say that so that that is recorded. Because little things that happen, if something bigger happens later on, you forget about the little things. And then, you know, a day or two later or a week later, when you write it all down and report it all out, you've left out a lot of things that have gone on because you weren't ready. You didn't write that down and something else happened that took your focus away, or you just plain forgot about it. So document everything that happens. You know, the best investigator is going to be the one that goes in first just to get a lay of the thing. He's not going in with 25,000 pieces of equipment on him. You know, walk through the place, find out what is going on, get a feel for the place, you know, talk to the spirits that are there. You know, you're there to contact ghosts, so don't be all shy and ashamed and bashful, you know, to go in and start speaking, because people are going to think you're crazy. You know, if you're worried about people thinking you're crazy, you're in the wrong line of work already. And I call it work because, you know, this is a job. You know, you don't have to be paid for it to be a job. Paranormal investigating is a job, and you need to try to do it as best you can. And I hope that some of the things that we talk about in this four-part series will help you guys that, you know, maybe have some questions on how some things work. Hopefully, you'll be able to take this information. Next week, we're going to do the last in this four-part series, and next week is team and case management. We're going to be talking about problems you run into on your team, things that happen on cases, things you need to look for, paperwork that you need to have in order, and everything of that nature. And we're out of time here tonight, so want to say thank you for everyone who tuned in. We've got Bishop James Long coming up next, so everyone please stay tuned. He always has a great, great show, and great, great person in the paranormal field. One of the most trusted people I would ever go to with any type of negative spirit or any type of exorcism type thing that needed to happen. As a matter of fact, I've consulted with him before on stuff, so you know, you definitely want to stay tuned and listen to him. Great guy. Again, thank you all. Please be sure to tune in next week for the last part of this four-part series on Paranormal 101, team and case management. From everyone here at Ghost Chatter, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to be here tonight, and I look forward to seeing you guys next week. Hello, this is Jim Morris with Ghost Chatter, inviting you to listen to my good friends Bishop James Long and Francis Etney of the Sacred Division immediately following Ghost Chatter tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
This podcast is part of the MyPodcast.com network. Go online right now and get your very own 100% free podcast, MyPodcast.com.
This is a production of the Paranormal.
The gateway between normal and paranormal close, and ghost chatter begins to fade away. But when the will of the living and the departed is strong enough to break through the barriers, Ghost Chatter will be heard once again. Your host, Jimmy Morris, welcomes you back next week when Ghost Chatter returns on the Para-X Radio Network.
This has been a production of the Para-X Radio Network.